Here we are at our eighth session at Vision Community Church in Brookhaven, Mississippi. And you all are hanging in here. It's a February afternoon, and in the best of circumstances, I have been known to take a nap at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. But y'all are sitting there taking notes and paying attention, and I could not be prouder of you. So we thank Eleanor for opening us in prayer. We've had a few questions and comments. So now let's continue with our lecture, shall we? We are going to look at the 10 areas of wisdom and life skill. That's 10 areas. We're going to be moving at a little clip here, but remember, everyone will be at the conference where we'll be receiving a CD with all of this materials, plus Bible studies, plus quiet times and devotionals. So we hope to leave you in good shape. Now, 10 areas of wisdom and life skill. Number one, concentrate on what is being said. Does that seem to be a theme? Concentrate on what is being said. Proverbs 7:24. Now therefore, my son, listen to me and pay attention to the words of my mouth. A good wisdom and life skill is for a child to listen to and concentrate on whatever is being said to them. It presupposes something, though, doesn't it? Hush, come, and obey. Remember those foundational big five? We said the foundational big five were necessary to teach wisdom and life skills. If your children will not hush, if they will not come when they're called, if they will not obey you, they cannot concentrate on what is being said. So we deal with that first. What is the discipline for this? Three spanks. Three spanks. We always considered an unwillingness to listen is a challenge to authority. So three spanks for rebellion. What's the best evaluation time? Usually when there are distractions, or when you're asking the child to do something that the child dislikes, or hear something they dislike. When the child is asked to respond to a guest, that is also a time. I don't know how many times I'm at a conference when somebody will say, well, greet Pastor John, and the child will just ignore. They will not listen to what their parents said, nor would they respond in obedience. Or during the instruction time, during discipline. Children don't want to hear the instruction. They just want the discipline to get over with. But that's not what it's all about, is it? It's not about us punishing the child and then paying for an error. It's about a change of behavior. It's about their success. So we must teach our children to concentrate on what is being said. You know, if they do that, they will be successful at school and at work, won't they? Very important. Number two, sitting still and entertaining themselves. When requested, the child should be willing to sit quietly and wait for whatever is being waited for. To sit still. Now that's essential for school, isn't it? Can a child learn if they can't sit still? How about church? How about social trips? I had a minister tell me that they went out to the East Coast every year at Christmas time for a family vacation, and he said he dreaded the car trip all year. Well, every year we drove up to Colorado Springs from Houston, which is about the same distance, to see my sister, and Eleanor and I looked forward to that trip all year. No telephone, no distraction, just our family together, traveling, stopping, picnicking along the way, singing hymns, playing games. It was a great time. The difference was that we had trained our children to be able to sit still and entertain themselves, to be nice to each other, and his children couldn't. And we took a wooden spoon with us. It was always on the dash. Another thing is at the dinner table. I really encourage parents to have sit-down dinners. I know why most parents don't have sit-down dinners. It's because their children won't sit still. But if your children won't sit still at the dinner table, are they going to sit still in the classroom? I don't know why my children are always getting in trouble at school. Well, yes, you do. Because that's how you train them. You train them to get in trouble at school, and now they're at school getting in trouble, just like you trained them to do. Instead of training up your child in the way he should go, learning to sit still at the dinner table, not touch any food, not touch the silverware, not start eating, but wait, sitting still, until mother is seated, and people are and the dinner is blessed and thanked, and food is passed, and then eating. Your child just, you know, your child eats, you know, just like a bunch of chickens, you know. And so they continue to act like that. Proverbs 30 verse 5 says, I wait for the Lord, my soul does wait, and in my His word I do hope. And we know the historical revelation of the Bible is replete with examples of men like Saul and David and Samson and Solomon who just could not wait, could they? They always had to jump the gun. They just couldn't sit still and wait, and they were always getting in trouble, weren't they? When told, the child should be able to sit quietly and wait for what is being waited for. As the child gets older, they should be able to go to a room or play area and entertain themselves. They should be able to sit at the church without being a distraction. Look, I have an example here that I share all over the world. And this is what I share. Some good friends of ours, Kevin and Laura McGee, attended our family discipleship seminar when Kevin was a graduate student and later worked at the medical center, Dexter Rice University. They lived in a small one-bedroom apartment, but had a number of children at the time. I was over visiting at their apartment, and I noticed tape on the floor of their apartment. And I asked Kevin about it, and he said, oh, these are the walls of the room. So this is my office, and this is Laura's art or music or study area. What were you into at that time?
Office.
Yeah. And this is the children's play area. And the children know not to cross that tape. And this is the area where they play quietly when we have Bible study. I thought, what a great testimony. Mother should be able to have friends over, have a quiet time, prepare dinner, take a nap in peace. Eleanor, I made sure Eleanor, who made the sacrifice of giving up her career to be a stay-at-home mom, that the house was a place of peace for her. She could have women over to disciple. She could take a nap. She could have a quiet time because she could ask the children. She didn't send the children to their room as punishment. She would just say, you know, in this quiet corner or in your room or someplace, I'm going to set the timer and mommy's going to have her quiet time or mommy's going to have a Bible study. Would you please play quietly in your room, you know, for 45 minutes, for an hour? And the children would do it. That's a great wisdom and life skill, isn't it? When the teacher at school says, okay, when you finish your work, I want you to sit quietly and work at your desk. You can read, you can color, you can do something, but please sit quietly. Who are the successful children going to be? The ones who can sit quietly, aren't they? Who are the children who are going to be in trouble? The ones who whisper and talk and poke and pass notes. So it's a wonderful, wonderful skill. However, it presupposes no hush and obey, doesn't it? No, we always go back to those big five, don't we? Rob and Pam Stevens, some good friends of ours, talk to their preschool children before Bible study meets in the home. And they discuss some things. Now, the people are going to come in, you're going to come downstairs, and you're going to greet the guests. You're going to be polite. For a little while, you're going to have to sit on the couch and talk to them, but then you're going to be able to go back up into your room. But when you're up there, you need to play quietly. So it's good. They kind of gave some prep time to their kids. That's nice, isn't it? Little training. But we do that in all endeavors where people need training, don't they? Don't all athletes warm up? Don't all musicians warm up? Before a speech contest or a mathematics decathlon or a spelling bee, Don't the students warm up? So it's all right when you know your children are going to be in a special situation to have a little warm-up time with them. I thought that was really sensitive. When, for number two, to sit still, when's the best time? Meal. Meal time. That is the number one time. The next number one time is doctor visits. That's the number two time. Number three, following instructions. Now, this is essential for school and for success in any extracurricular activity or church activity, to follow instructions. Matthew 11:1 says, and it came about that, let's see, snap out of it, John. And it came about when Jesus had finished giving instructions to his 12 disciples, he departed from there to teach and preach in the cities. Review, review, review. That's the model. Okay, the child should be able to concentrate on what is being said at his level and follow through unsupervised. That's very important. Remember, one training spank should be sufficient. You tell the child what the task is. You do it with the child observing you. You do it with the child. You supervise the child. And then you turn it over to the child. When I was a young Christian, I was exhorted many times to witness. And I would leave church and I would look out and there would be the world before me. And, you know, I mean, I was just lost in the chaos of it. And then I met a Christian organization called the Navigators, and they said, would you like to learn how to witness? They said, you know, it's the most frustrating thing. I don't know how to witness. I don't know what to say. I invite people. I try to talk to them. He says, oh, no. I want to know if you want to learn how to witness. I'm not asking you to go witnessing. There's a guy named Greg Fair. I'm assuming you don't know how to witness. You don't know. I said, no. I said, well, I would never ask you to go witnessing. Well, I want to know if you want to learn how. And I said, yeah. And they had a little training program. You showed up, and they teamed you out with somebody, and all you did was walk around and watch him witness. And then slowly, over a semester, every week, he taught you to do one of the things he was doing. And at the end of 12 weeks, he was watching you do it, because it would be turned over to you. And I learned how to witness in a semester. So I thought, you know, that's how you should train your children. So you tell your children, okay, clean up your room. And your child goes in there into a 5 or 6 year old. That room looks the same to me as the world does. It's just chaos. So what I did with the children is I cleaned the room for them with them watching me. And I said, see, this is what we're doing. Just stay with me. And every once in a while I have to give them a training spank. Because they wouldn't pay attention. They thought this was a great deal. I was cleaning. So, then I would say, be time for dinner, and we always ask children to clean their rooms up right before dinner, and I would say to the child, okay, I call them into my office, go up to your room, and pick everything up off the floor of your room and put it on the bed, and then come back. Then they would come back. And I'd say, go up to your room, take everything off your bed and put it where it belongs. And put it where it belongs. So go up to your room and go along the wall, the baseboard, under the bed. Take everything that doesn't belong there and put it on your bed. And then come back. And say, okay, now take everything off your bed and put it where it belongs. Then they put it where it belongs. Say, now I want you to look on the dresser, on the bedside table, and the floor of your closet, and take anything that doesn't belong there and put it on the bed. And they put it on the bed. Now I say, now I want you to go up to your room and take everything off the bed and put it where it belongs. And put it. Now I want you to go up and make your bed and close your closet doors and straighten the bedside table. And they would do that. And then I would check it. Okay? So now, and then finally, we get on the point where I could say, clean your room, and they would know how to clean your room. But that's done in increments, isn't it? Teach a child to set the table. I would have the children walk around with me, and their heads would be big enough to look over the table. That's when they can set the table. And I would begin setting the table and showing them where the knife, fork, spoon, things like that go. And they would be watching me. We'd do that for about a week. And slowly, during that week, I would be handing them the fork. And I'd say, now this is where the fork goes. Now all the forks will go in the same place. And we'd go all the way around. And I'd say, now the knives go on the other side. We'd go all the way around. Now the spoon goes next to the knife. We'd go all the way around. Now the glass goes over the spoon. We'd go all the way around. Yeah. And then finally we'd get to the point where I would, while Eleanor was cooking, I would just sit on a stool and I would watch them. I would say, now wait just a second. We start off with the plate with the fork on the left. So let's get the plates down first. Oh yeah, that's right. Okay, now that's the right, now that's the left. Then they get old. A lot of times when they turn the corner, the fork ends up on the wrong place. And, you know, you just kind of coach them. And then slowly, they're able to do it by themselves. And now you can just ask the child to set the table. This presupposes obey and hush, though, doesn't it? Best evaluation time when the child is in a hurry or learning a new task or just doesn't feel like it. But it's very important for children to learn to follow instructions, isn't it? Is it a good wisdom and life skill for a child to always be telling their teacher, I don't understand, I don't remember? No, that's not. That child will not do well on the sports team they're involved in, on the Cub Scout group, the Boy Scout group, the Girl Scout group, the church group, the Iguana group. A child who cannot pay attention is always saying, huh? What? Huh? What? Wait. Slow down. Okay. Submission to authority, Roman numeral 4. It's essential for school, work, walk with God, church, just about everything. 1 Peter 2:13 says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution. That pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? The child should be able to respond to legitimate authority and cooperate irrespective of the quality of that authority. 1 Peter 2, verse 13. Irrespective of the quality of the authority. We always told our children, whether they had a good teacher or a bad teacher, or a good coach or a bad coach, they still had to do well. Because life doesn't just line up all the best just for you, does it? So it's a good wisdom and life skill to, irrespective of the authority that God has placed over you, for you to be able to do well. And it presupposes all five. No, obey, come, open, give, hush. They need all of this to submit to authority. We use 3 rebellion spanks, but modeling is essential. It's very important. Dads, you complain about the president, you complain about the government, you complain about the governor, you complain about the mayor, you complain about the police, you complain about the pastor and the deacons and the church, you don't like the music, you don't like the curriculum. You've got a little fuzz buster on your dash so that you can speed, and that you're always cutting corners. You complain about the taxes. You complain about your boss. Complain about everything. Then you wonder why your sons are restive under your authority. Well, they've learned from the master, haven't they? Why should your children submit to your authority when you complain about everybody else's authority? Moms, you argue with your husband. You contradict him. You correct him. Your children can hear door slamming and you argue with him. You correct his driving. You nag him. Nag him about church. Nag him about work. Nag him about the kids. They're always hearing you complain. And then you don't understand why your children aren't more respectful of you. Well, they learned from the master, didn't they? They grew up listening to you be disrespectful, ill-mannered, and complaining to your husband. And now you're reaping what you sowed. So, submission to authority is one of the things that is equally caught and taught. We teach it, but it's essential to model it. Manners. Manners are essential for social development and advancement in all forms of society. Proverbs 1:3. We are told that the Proverbs of Solomon are given to receive instruction in wise behavior. Ephesians 6:2 says, honor your father and mother. That's a matter of manners, isn't it? James 3:13 says, who among you is wise? Let him show by his good behavior. So manners are important, aren't they? Manners are important to God. Now, this is what we taught or teach, have taught our children in our home. These are the manners we teach them. They are not commanded by God, so you don't have to teach them that, but you have to teach them something. Proverbs 3:7 says that we are to grant the wife honor in the home. Proverbs 31:30 says her children rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her. So a wife should have a position of honor in the home. Now, you have to think then, how am I going to do this? How am I going to make sure my children honor my wife in the home? How can I ensure they honor their mother? Because it doesn't just happen, does it? So this is what we did. Table manners. At an early age, we expected the children to behave and eat their food. No complaints. No complaints. Sam would stand behind his chair and wait for his mother to be seated. Her children rise up and bless her. So that's what he did. I would seat Eleanor, and then Sam and I would sit. No one would eat till Eleanor lifted her fork. Where in the Bible does it say that between the time the wife has her first child and the last child leaves for college, mothers can't eat hot food? They have to eat by themselves. The Bible doesn't say that. When the children wanted something at the table, they had to ask, please pass the biscuits. And then I might say yes or no. May I please? Thank you. Children are to eat what is set before them with their mouth closed, chewing with their mouth closed, without complaining, using correct serving pieces. That's why Sam was invited to sit at the president's table at the University of Texas at Austin, because the head of housing knew he wouldn't embarrass him. That's why Sam, when he was in ROTC, was asked to put on the annual banquet, because he knew how to behave himself. That's why Sam, as a young lieutenant, when the executive officer was reassigned and they were changing flags, was put in charge of the ceremony rather than people two and three ranks ahead of him, because he knew how to behave. That's a gift I gave Sam. He wasn't a girly boy, because he was in the military and he played varsity baseball. And he liked to hunt and shoot, fish. He likes to do all those things. But I raised him as a Christian gentleman. Christian gentleman. And that was a gift I gave him. No one gets at the table to ask for any seasoning that's not on the table. Because no child needs to improve the cooking of my wife. So nobody gets to say, can I have some ketchup? If there's ketchup on the table, they can ask to pass it. But to say, can I get up and get some ketchup, is equivalent to insulting my wife's cooking. So they get a spank for that. You don't insult my wife's cooking. You don't complain. You eat it with thanksgiving. How about the door? The children have grown up watching me hold the door for Eleanor. I get the door for my daughters. Sam always held the door for his mother and his daughters. When are they going to learn how a Christian gentleman treats a lady, if not from their father? When are they going to learn how a Christian lady should be treated by a man, if not in the home? I remember a young boy from church was taking one of our daughters to a meeting. And I noticed that he just pulled up in the driveway and honked his car. And I told Becca, you just stay up in your room. You're not going anywhere. So after a while, he came inside. He came out and knocked on the door. And I wasn't obnoxious. You know, these stories, you know, I'm there cleaning my gun in the kitchen when the boy comes. I think those are silly and infantile. But I did expect the young man who called on my daughters to sit down in the living room and talk to me. In fact, one of my daughters said that she told him, now remember, my dad likes people who talk in sentences, so you have to talk in sentences when he talks to them. So, now they have to talk in sentences to me. So I'll visit them for a little while, and then I'll call my daughter down, because anything good is worth waiting for. But I noticed he didn't open the door for her, so I was going to talk to my daughter about that, and you know, she just knew I was going to ruin her social life. And I said, well, sweetheart, just do this. Next time, promise me you'll do this, and I won't ask you ever to do it again. Next time when you get to church or to the youth meeting, to the praise meeting, wherever you're going, he's going to jump out of the car and start walking away. Don't say anything. Just fold your hands in your lap and sit there and look straight ahead. Don't do anything. I'll be so embarrassed. I said, just do this. So she said she would. And I said, what's going to happen is out of the corner of your eye, you're going to see him look around and realize you're not there. And then he's going to see where you are, and he's going to come stumbling over, kind of running over there. He's going to open the door, and he's going to be all confused, and he's going to say he always opens doors for girls. He doesn't know what he was thinking about. And then he's going to be kind of goofy all night, and he's going to be really doting over you and getting you your Coke and, you know, kind of hovering over you, and he's going to explain over and over again that he really is a nice guy. And so she came home from the time with a young man, and she was a little sheepish, and she said, that's exactly what happened. So, a boy who's not willing to treat my daughter like a Christian lady is not a Christian gentleman. I'm not that interested in him hanging around, and vice versa. Speech. Children can say yes, no, please, thank you, may I, excuse me. And they can use consonants and multisyllable words in sentences. And we would require that. Social skills are important. When I would have guests over, the children would be expected to come down and meet the guests. Now, the only thing more boring than sitting around listening to your parents talk with adult friends is going shoe shopping with your mother in the mall. And I understand that. So I'm not going to torture them, but it is a good wisdom and life skill to be able to interact in boring social situations. And so they would sit there for a little while and visit and sit quietly and answer questions when spoken to. And then I would excuse them to go back up to their room. Firm handshake, look the person in the eye, speak up, and don't be a smart aleck. Just answer questions. No playing the shy game. I wouldn't let my children be the class clown, or I wouldn't use them for entertainment. I always think ministers and staff and people make a big mistake using their children for entertainment among the gifts. If your child has learned how to tumble, then they can come and do a somersault for the guest. But one or two is enough. Or if they've learned to do their scales on the clarinet or the piano, then they can do one or two of their scales, but that's enough. They're not entertainment. They need to grow up with a sense of dignity. Don't allow them to unnaturally be the center of attention, because they'll carry that over into other social situations. And as they get older, the stakes rise, don't they? Smoking, drinking, risk-taking becomes necessary in order to be the center of attention. Eating out. Children shouldn't make a mess or a scene. I know when a lot of times when you eat out with the children, where do they always stick people with elementary school and younger children? Way in the back, huh? Because they're just presupposing that you're going to be a real mess. And so you shouldn't be. when your children leave, there shouldn't be crumbs and stuff all around, whether it's a high chair or whatever it is. If you're at a cafeteria, I'll always tell the children, now put your hand in my pocket, and they can walk around next to you. McDonald's doesn't have those play areas because they like children. McDonald's have those play areas because they know we live in a culture where children can't be taken into little tea shops or little nice cultural settings where they will grow in their conversational relationship with their parents and in their social situations. But they have to have an indestructible play set and play areas filled with urine-soaked balls where they can jump around and throw themselves and try to break things and not be able to, and scream and yell and kick while their parents sit on the other side of semi-soundproof plexiglass walls and enjoy their meal. But that's not a biblical view of a mother eating with her children. Children should have respect for other people's property and should be able to sit still. And a gift, gentlemen, that you can give to your wife is that she can actually do those really fun cultural and outing events with her children that she always hoped she could do. Most moms, when they take their kids to the park, sit quietly on their side while their children act out their rebellious and sullen aggression in all sorts of different ways, dreading the moment when they have to try to coax that child to come back into the car and receive public humiliation and punishment for doing so. That's as opposed to holding their mother's hands and interacting and talking and swinging together and playing and then having a little picnic together and looking at the butterflies and talking and doing all of the things that only happens in children's books written in the 1800s. But my wife had all of those experiences, and your wife can have those too. Parent, people should not have manners, possessions. People should not have to childproof their home because you're coming over. Now, some things like covers on light sockets or putting away poisonous things, you know, you do because all children may make a mistake, all children may sin, and the stakes are so high. But when you go, your children go to grandma's house or somebody else's house, they shouldn't have to move everything above the 4-foot line that can be broken or scratched or has any value at all. Because your children should respect their property. Kevin and Laura McGee came over to our house, the same family that had the tape, and they just went around in our house with their children. They said, can we do a little walkthrough? And we said, sure, and they just said, no, 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 no. And they showed their children what the no's were, and their children respected and obeyed it. And that's why we always enjoyed having the McGees over for a visit. Kindness, number 6. Kindness. It's essential for social and spiritual development. Proverbs 19:22. What is desirable in a man is kindness. Now that's pretty clear, isn't it? Proverbs 31:26. She opens her mouth in kindness. Kindness. The child should be both merciful and gracious to those weaker than himself. Physically weak, deformed, infirmed, aged, mental deficiencies, the alien, the widow, the orphan, the poor. Best, we used the discipline strokes and modeling. No fighting in our family, no name calling one child to the other. Family values should be openly discussed at the dinner table and practiced by the father. The children will naturally follow. One of the things Sam and I did was on Saturday mornings, we would get up early before baseball practice or before Saturday events started going, and we would go over to Widow Johnson's house and mow her lawn. Because she couldn't mow her lawn, and I knew her at church, and if we mowed her lawn, she didn't have to pay for it, and she got to go to Luby's with some of the other senior citizens at church. And sometimes when I was putting up the stuff, Widow Johnson would sit on the porch of her little clapboard house there and give Sam a little Kool-Aid or a little ice cream and talk with him
and tell him how much he appreciated that. Well, you see, I was teaching Sam to be kind, wasn't I? Kind to widows, kind to orphans. When someone with a severe burn or some of the deformity comes into McDonald's, your child can't point at them and go, "Ooh, what's that?" or laugh. Because if they do, they go out into the bathroom or to the car and they get spanked for that. Because that's not kind, is it? They learn not to stare, not to ask unkind questions. So even small children who are not socialized into group play can learn to let other children play independently with their toys. I realize it's only at a certain age that children have the cognitive ability to engage in group play. But even your small child, when they're playing independently and you have the little mother's prayer group over, and you're a 9-month-old, 1-year-old, 2-year-old child is playing with their little pony, and the guest child who's about 2 years old comes over and picks up maybe the little teddy bear, your child should not go over there and push that child and take the teddy bear away. That's not kind. They should learn to share. Karen Clark, a missionary from Mexico, once said this: "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will wound me for life." And that's true. When children are cruel with each other, the wounds of those cruelties can last for decades. So we would not allow our children to be cruel to each other. They would be respectful to the elderly, the very young, the poor, the disabled. Our daughter Becca, when she was in junior high, would go to a nursing home and read to the elderly. She got that idea because I once shared that with her when I was a freshman at the university. I used to go to a nursing home, and there was a blind Christian there that I knew that was blind, and I would read from the Bible to him. I remember a lady at... I was an education pastor at a Baptist church, and a lady that I hardly even know came up, and she was in tears, and she said, "I just don't know what I'm going to do now that Sam is going away to college, because I praise God for him every day." I thought, I hope this isn't weird, because it sure sounds weird. And so I said, "I don't understand." And then she told me who her son was. And her son was a special needs child who was still functional, but probably will never develop more than about a fourth or fifth grade level. But one that is kind of large and kind of loud and kind of clumsy. And of course, not very popular with the high school group. And my son was a varsity baseball player. When I had come on staff there, this boy had always been kind of on the fringes of things. And so after youth activities or stuff like that, when they chose up teams, Sam always chose him first. And would he'd come over there and Sam would go, "Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, as a guy," and taught him to do the high five. And when it was football, Sam always made sure Hezekiah got the ball, and also made sure everybody let him get a few yards, or they heard from it from Sam. He always made sure Hezekiah got to hit the ball and kind of run to first base. Sam would coach him. And over the years, pretty soon, he was kind of the star. So it would be time to choose up teams, and everybody would be going, "Hezekiah! Hezekiah!" and clap their hands, and then he would kind of jump up and down. And she said, not only did he start liking church, but his whole attitude towards school and life and learning and his confidence changed. And that's all just from a high school kid being kind. That's the power of kindness. That's why I'm so proud of my son. When my daughters went to the pool for the first time, I asked them if any boys bothered them, and they said, "No, no boys will talk to us, because Sam had led to Christ, the catcher. Sam played shortstop in center field. He had led the catcher, which is a huge guy, to Christ. And all the guys knew he was the religious guy because he prayed for the team before the games. And the word had gone out that these were Sam's sisters and that no one could talk to him. So they said, oh, and don't worry about us, Dad. No boys will ever talk to us. It's because of Jesse and Sam, and the other guys on the baseball team. So they look out for their sisters. They're kind. They're loving. Megan had a younger sister. And of course, you know, Megan was two grades above her. And there's a big social divide between a freshman and a junior, isn't there? Or a sophomore and a senior. But Megan let all her friends know that she was, and Megan was very popular in high school. That she let all her friends know that she wasn't interested in any social events or youth events or church events that her little sister Lizzie wasn't also invited to. See, that's being kind, isn't it? It's being kind. It's not only doing right, but it's also being repulsed by any cruelty to man or animals or other people, by racism. So you watch over your children and you help them develop kindness. You make off-limits TV shows and music and video games and things like that that promote unkind behavior. Okay? Number seven, neatness. In Genesis 41:14, when Pharaoh sent for Joseph, what did he do? He cleaned himself up and shaved himself, didn't he? And so it's good for a young man. Genesis 41:14. It's good for a young man. You know, it's like my dad used to tell me, there's nothing wrong with being dirty as long as you don't like it. Working man is dirty. That's no problem with that. Just don't ever get used to it. Always wait for the day, for the time when you can clean yourself up, present yourself as a gentleman. That's why 1 Corinthians 14:40 says, let all things be done in an orderly manner. So neatness is important for a child to learn. And if they can't keep their schoolwork neat, they can't keep their room neat, they're not going to be successful in life. They should be able to care for their own body as well as their living area and possessions. We used one training spank. Number eight, teachable. And you know, on neatness, let's go back to that a second. You know, neatness has to do, like we talked about setting the table. We had our children wash their own clothes, wash their own bathrooms. You know, sometimes I ask the men, I just don't know who you married. I married a Christian lady, and I expected her. Eleanor to be treated with respect as a Christian lady in the home. And my dad used to have a phrase. He'd say, you know, my mother raised... I said, why don't you do that, Dad? He'd say, well, my mother raised me for better. That's why I don't do that. But there is some sense to that. Did Eleanor's parents really raise her just to be a servant to a bunch of selfish, unthankful children? And the answer is no. And so I have to make sure she has a place of honor in the home. As soon as the children are able to set the table, they should be setting the table. We have four children. One set the table, one cleared the table, one did the hand dishes, one did the dishwasher dishes. The girls helped Eleanor cook. Children can clean up their rooms, they can make their beds. Each of the children had a washing day. And if they got their clothes washed on the washing day, they had clean clothes. If they didn't, they had to work around one of the other children or their mother. But if they wanted clean clothes, they had to do their wash. And they had responsibilities outside, in the yard, and with the pets. These are important things as your children grow up with responsibility. And then like with Megan, tell them about Megan and her friends and cooking. I'm catching you off guard.
When she went to college and was living in her first apartment, she was fixing chili and cornbread for dinner one day, and her roommates came in and said, oh, you mean you can make cornbread not from a box? Because they just didn't know anything about cooking. And she was, it made her feel good that she made scratch and
they had to fix a meal for her. Yeah, and so she ended up being the go-to person to learn how to cook among her friends. But that's a gift her mother gave her, wasn't it? Now, the only exception I make is I don't encourage parents to teach their sons how to cook. We didn't teach Sam how to cook, simply because it's been my observation that men who know how to cook marry much later than men who don't. That's just true. I didn't know how to cook, and I was a terrible cook, and I got so tired of eating the junk I prepared. And one day, Eleanor's apartment was an apartment of women, and they led a Bible study, and I had a guy's Bible study, and they all invited us over to eat, you know, for a Bible study fellowship after church one Sunday night. And we all went over there, and I was eating this food, and it was the greatest food I'd tasted since I left my mom. And I found out Eleanor had cooked it, and I remember thinking, somebody ought to marry that girl. Is all this food going to waste? So anyways, that's the Bible doesn't say that. It's just my observation. Young men who know how to cook are a lot more satisfied with single lives than young men who are eating cookies for breakfast and coffee and stuff out of boxes in the evening. So, well, Roman numeral 8, teachable. Children need to learn to serve through responsibilities and to learn how to do these responsibilities correctly. The Bible says in Proverbs 28:20, a faithful man will abound in blessings. Children should grow in the ability of learning and be faithful in responsibilities that they learn to do. But to learn to do these things, they have to be teachable. A toddler at age 2 can pick up toys, put away dirty clothes, and other small tasks. By age 3, children can make their bed, keep their room and play area clean, set the table. Now, they can't do it like an adult does it, but one of the greatest hindrances to parents training children is they're unwilling to be satisfied with kind of the imperfections of a child accomplishing something other than an adult. So they tend to push the child out of the way and take it. But we all know how frustrating that is, even at our level. At age 4, children can take out the trash and care for pets. At age 5, or as soon as the head clears the table, they can sit and clear the table. At age 7, as soon as they can reach the sink and hold a dish, they can do the dishes. They can wash them and dry them and put them away with the help of a stool. Also, and they can up and begin doing other house chores. By age 9, they can mow the lawn, sweep up, vacuum, and dust. By age 11, they should be cooking meals, washing their own clothes, babysitting, and teaching the other children how to do these things as well. So, mom can be a lot more rested when she gets home, as she has well-mannered, well-behaved children who are helping around the house. That should be motivation, guys. Best evaluation time is before school, or when you're having guests over. Weekend chores. Number 9... we're almost through. Number 9 is issues of gender. The Bible says that God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And it's very important to raise our young men as young men and to raise our daughters as young ladies. The Bible says that the abandonment of gender roles is volitional, not genetic. That's in Romans 1:23-27. And we should realize that. The move away from clear gender roles is an act of rebellion on man's part. It is not something that they are forced to do. Now, there are genetics do play a part on all of the weaknesses of man, simply because our physical bodies fell when we fell. Now, I have a friend who was born blind when I was growing up. Because he was born blind, can he be bitter and angry at God? No. Eleanor has a stepbrother who was born deaf. He's profoundly deaf. Does he have the excuse never to work and be a beggar? No. In fact, he has a good job. and is a productive member of society. I know a man who's losing through a degenerative disease the use of his legs and his motor skills. Does he have the right to be wicked and sinful? No. No. It's a genetic-based disease, but he doesn't have that right. And there may be genetic results where some men seem to be more feminine than other men. But that is still not an excuse to abandon gender roles. There may be genetic link to some women having more of a masculine appearance than other women. But again, that's purely a societal evaluation and a sinful one at that. So there is no biblical excuse, even with a genetic link, to abandon gender roles. Children should have a positive awareness of their gender and a positive outlook on the existence of the opposite sex, the opposite gender. And the key is good communication as a child. Now, Eleanor, when her daughters began close to having their period, instead of going into shock making fun and calling me in and saying, "Look, you know, your daughter's starting to have hair under her arms," and then everybody laughing and humiliating my daughter. Eleanor had a very close conversational relationship with all of her daughters, and they transitioned in this, and that culminated in a special mother-daughter date. So, sweetheart, could you come up here and tell them about the mother-daughter date that you would have with the girls? Since you come here, now step aside.
Okay. We would go someplace special, and I did something a little different with each one, and then it would just give them a chance to ask questions and for me to talk about what it meant to grow up as a girl. And they all three had different reactions, everything from not wanting to go through any changes to feeling like it was all very beautiful, to one who's very scientifically minded, who wanted me to diagram everything out for her. So I noticed as I was drawing my little diagram and explaining to her that we were at a little restaurant, and there was an older couple at the table next to us, and they were just about to fall out of her chairs. They were leaning over so close so that they could hear what we were talking about. But the whole point was just to open up a dialogue so that they could ask me questions as they had questions later on, and for me to try to present the whole idea of becoming a woman as a positive thing and nothing to be afraid of, you know, but something that was a very exciting part of their lives and something that God was growing them up into. So it just made it kind of...
Now, didn't that lady make a comment to you when she was leaving? That she wished her mother had done that with her. Yeah. And what, you also took feminine hygiene products with you, didn't you? Took them through that. And so those were exciting times with Eleanor and her daughters to go through that. And so, and myself with the same with my son. Your children are going to learn about their sexual development and reproduction, and they are going to either learn about it from their friends, from the media, or from you. So how much better for you? So we always stressed how healthy it was for boys to be boys and girls, girls. Sam played with army men and guns, and our girls played with dolls and pretty ponies and things like that. So the last skill is letting go. This is not parents letting go of their children. This is children letting go of their parents. When Jesus called the young man in Matthew 8:21 through 23, and he said, "First let me go and bury my parents," what did Jesus say? Nope. Fish or cut bait. In Matthew 4:21 and 22, it says they left their father, their mother, their nets, their servants, and follow Jesus. And so we want to prepare our children to leave us, don't we? Now, what are some places that they can learn that in? What are some keys? Well, when they're very young, leaving them in the church nursery without you having to be called out of church because your children are screaming. That's important, isn't it? Isn't it traumatic for your children to be left in the nursery? Won't they think you're abandoning them? Well, no. What they'll learn is that mommy and daddy go away and come back. Isn't that a more realistic view of life than mommy and daddy never leave you? We will always be there, always, always, always. Because that's not true, is it? So it's much healthier for children to learn that mommy and daddy have responsibilities in a life, and they go away and they return. And so as your children get older, going to church camp, going to youth retreats, going to school and scholastic retreats, leaving and coming back is a very good experience for them as they prepare to leave home and go to college. I would discourage parents from making the first time your children have ever been apart from you from any extended period of time is the first 3 months they spend at college in a very rough and tumble environment. So it's good if you have Christian relatives that they can go spend a little time with and come back. If you have a church that has youth retreats, if you have mission trips that they can go on, these are all excellent ways to prepare them. And the church has a responsibility to offer some things, some opportunities like this to help the parents with their children. Well, that finishes our lecture series for today. But we have to remember the goal. The goal is our children's success. That our children would grow up to lead lives both fruitful and fulfilled in their relationship with God and man. That they would do this apart from the parents while still maintaining a loving relationship with the parents. And so these 10 wisdom in life skills we found prepared our children for that. But now you don't have to use those. But you have to come up with something. You don't have to use the big five, but you have to come up with something. You don't have to use our method of one spank, two spank, three spank, but you have to come up with something. And if you don't have anything, I would encourage you to use this and then let it grow as you adapt it to your specific family needs. Lord, we thank you for this time together. Bless our children and our grandchildren. In Christ's name we pray, amen.